chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating.
I am thrilled to have Sean Lambert on the show today. Sean is the president of YWAM, Youth with a Mission, San Diego, Baja.
Well, Sean, I have been looking so forward to this episode with you. Thank you so much, my friend, for making time to be on the Something Extra podcast today.
Yeah, I feel like the freshman at the senior prom. I'm just happy to be here.
Well, and thank you for technology, right? Because we can do this through technology, you're sitting in sunny San Diego right now. And actually, I'm sitting in sunny St. Louis. It is beautiful. It's a beautiful day here in St. Louis. But Sean, I tell you, you know, you and I got connected years ago, probably about, I was thinking about it, it was probably about 15 years ago, because wow. I don't know if you remember. Yeah, we got connected through YPO, Young Presence Organization, and you run Homes of Hope through YWAM. We're going to talk a lot about that, but our daughter, Paige, who's our middle child, did a YPO trip with you, and this is before Greg and I even knew you, but did a YPO trip for Homes of Hope in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, to YPO teen event.
That is exactly right. And she was so moved by that experience. And I laugh because she was just like, I learned how to use power tools. And she thought that that was so awesome. But, you know, now we have Greg and our whole family have done a few Homes of Hope trips with you to Costa Rica. And I'm really hoping that we get to do that this year between Christmas and New Year's. I'm hoping that we can do that again. But, you know, we have just come to love you and Janet. We love your heart. We love the mission. All of that, Sean. So I just count it a real privilege to call you a friend.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. Very kind.
So we do get to see each other at least once a year because we are usually at the YPO Vision and Values conference together. So that's always fun to get to see you guys. But, you know, I don't know anything about this part of your story. So I'd love for you to go back and just tell me a little bit about how you grew up. Did you grow up in Southern California? I'm kind of thinking you didn't, but I don't remember where you grew up.
I grew up in Minnesota and had a very middle-class upbringing and grew up Catholic and then got invited to a little youth thing at a Lutheran church and ended up at a summer camp, which is where some of my leadership gifts started to shine. I was asked to be a counselor in a dorm of 12-year-olds, and I got bored one night and decided to do the Undie 500. So we all ran around the flagpole in our underwear, and I got in trouble for that. So sometimes you can be a visionary leader and not have the right idea, but from that, I realized, you know, maybe I ought to do something with young people. So that's where I kind of started seeing that maybe God could use my life for something more than whatever. So,
Yeah. Oh, that's an awesome. I love that. And so many times, Sean, when I talk to leaders, there was something in their childhood that was the impetus for what they're doing today. That happens. That should be a really, I should go back and really study that, but I can't tell you how many times there's something that happens, that really is kind of that catalyst.
Then when I was 19, I was in university and decided to step out of university and join Youth of the Mission, which was not a very big organization at the time. Now it's one of the biggest in the world. And ended up in Thailand, Christmas Day, 1979, working with Cambodian refugees fleeing from the Viet or actually Pol Pot, Cambodia. And I realized I could make a difference in people that were suffering. And not, I didn't love their suffering, but I loved that I had a joy in serving them that was so sustainable. And that kind of launched me into my career and eventually took me into Baja, Mexico, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? You set me up really well there. I do want, because some of our listeners may not know about YWAM, Youth with a Mission, but you're right. I mean, I don't know. Is it about 20,000 staff now?
That's closer to 30. We're in 187 countries. We have a couple thousand operating locations. It could be a small team, or like my campus, we have 240 full-time staff here in Baja, Mexico. And it can be, we have medical clinics all throughout Madagascar. We've got church planting teams in Nepal. So people kind of look at what's needed or relevant in that nation they're serving and kind of customize their responses based on that. But YWAM's like a big elephant. You can grab part of it and think, oh, I know YWAM. And it's bigger than you think and very eclectic in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell me this, because I want you to talk about the mission and the vision of YWAM and some of the guiding principles. But it was founded in 1960 by Lauren Cunningham, and I think Lauren has been dealing with some
Yeah, he's
cancer,
got stage
right?
four cancer and he's having a good season of grace. He doesn't feel any pain. He's kind of working hard on some legacy pieces. There's 8,000 languages in the world, and I think some of the sins of the past of missions is to miss the importance of people's heart language. And Lauren feels very passionate about understanding people's heart language, getting the Bible in every heart language. He's just lit up and passionate. We don't know what the cancer will do. But he's got a little, at least at this day, today, he's got a season of grace on him. And he's a wonderful man. They call him a deregulator. And when he started in 1960, young people were not allowed on the mission field. And he started taking young people out because missions was for professionals. And then women weren't allowed in much leadership. And Lauren believed that you can't take 50% of the population out. So he became an advocate for women. And then he became an advocate for every nation, all these nationalities and languages, that they were peers, not something else. So he would just advocate, hey, to a Nigerian or a Samoan, you can be a difference maker too. You're a peer. I'm not a colonialist, right? So Lauren has all of these things that he's done that people don't know. And I think the biggest thing I appreciate about Lauren, our founder, and how YWAM is structured is we're decentralized. So if you've never read Starfish and the Spider, go read. That's a great book. And so everybody wants to know who's in charge. And we have an 18-member board at my location. Every YWAM center has their own board, so we have a lot of accountability and authority and blah blah blah. But I think the idea of a empowering decentralized movement, not built around, a lot of people don't know who Lauren Cunningham is, and I think he's one of the most influential people in at least Christendom and probably even outside in what he's done to advocate for women, culture, language. He's an
I
amazing guy.
love it. Yeah, what a trailblazer, Sean, but in the background, but to be celebrated. So thank you, Lauren. If you're going to be listening to this, we are just so grateful for your leadership and how you've been an advocate for all of these different things. So I'm going to have to get that book, Starfish and the Spider. Yeah. I'll have to get that book, Sean. I've not read that. But tell me a little bit, you know, because the mission, the vision, the purpose, the beliefs you guys have, I don't even know how many guiding principles, but
we call them values.
Values. Yeah. Exhibiting servant leadership. Do first, then teach. Be relationship oriented. Communicate with integrity. I mean, it's a very strong culture in YWAM.
Yeah. Yeah, the culture is really what. So we have two things that really hold us together. Well, three. We have visionary, you know, a strong, cohesive vision, great culture and values, and then the importance of relational working. Because no matter what, if you're in a company and you have a good vision and you have a good process, if people have anger at each other and there's broken relationships everywhere, it's really hard to function. So right relationships with good core values and good strong vision has made YWAM, I think, a very, very amazing organization. Not without criticism, you know, whenever you have a lot of young people, they do dumb stuff. And so you can go on the internet and find things that people rant about everything nowadays. But overall, YWAM's got a great reputation with an amazing output of great activities.
Yes, for sure. I remember, Sean, I just thought about this, but we had a family assistant at one time for our family. As you know, our youngest daughter has Down syndrome. So we've always had help around that. And I remember a young woman, Julie Kinney, came on as a family assistant, and she had gone to YWAM. She was spent time in New Zealand. And that was the first time, and this was before I'd met you, that was the first time I'd ever really heard of YWAM. And she just talked about it changed her life. Well, she was wandering, no purpose or anything. And just that time in YWAM it changed the trajectory of her life. So you guys are doing wonderful things. But you are, you already talked about this a little bit, but your first overseas mission was in Thailand, but then when you came back, you did join YWAM in Los Angeles, and you are now the president of YWAM San Diego Baja. And so I love how you, because I was going to ask you to kind of explain to our listeners how things are structured, but it is very decentralized with all these different centers.
It's a bit like if you think about it, it's a bit like the Rotary Club. You know, no one can be the Rotary Club. You have to be the Rotary Club at Fresno, California, or St. Louis, Missouri. And then you have these common values, but every club has their own board and their own assets and their own finances. So we're a very connected mission, but we're decentralized, which is very empowering. I have six former presidents of companies on my board. So I always say going to my board meetings, it's like having a root canal. You feel really good when it's over. The accountability, you know, when you have presidents of their own company on your board and they're saying you can do this better, and it's an amazing process. So our board of directors has definitely made our mission a lot stronger. But we were in LA as kind of junior YWAM leaders, and we got permission to go to Mexico and start what we now call YWAM San Diego Baja. And the ethos of that original moving was, before I had decided to move, we had some offering money that we took to build one house for a family in need down in Baja, Mexico. So when I say, I like to say, when we have one of my takeaways would be servant leadership is visionary leadership. I went to Mexico to serve one family in need. And during the build, I thought to myself, I'd been to, I think, 23 countries at that time. And I thought, oh man, this is one of the funnest things I've ever done all over the world. And I brought my 3.5-year-old daughter with me, and she played with another family living in an old abandoned bus that had two little girls about her age. And that mom kind of took in my daughter and you know, made sure she was okay while I was working. Guys don't make very good babysitters normally. And so I was building a house, and my daughter was playing next door. And at the end of the build, she came up to me and pulled on my sleeve and said, "Daddy, are you going to build a house for the bus people too?" And that question transformed my life. All I could think about driving home after that build. Now, keep in mind, I went to Mexico to build one house, but there was another family who needed to be served. And so I picked up the phone and made a couple phone calls and rallied a group to raise some money and come down, and we did a second house. I think we did 12 the first year, and then it started exploding. And in 1993, I had a businessman named Chris Crane, and he was a YPOer, yes. Harvard MBA, and he brought his forum group to build, and they loved it. And then shortly after that, a couple of years later, actually, but there was a lot of stuff in between, we had a whole group of YPOers in 1997 that came and built. And what happened is it kept growing and growing. Well, now today we're at 7,600 homes in 27 different countries, 44 different cities, engaged over 150,000 people. And it's just been incredible to see what happened. And I look back now and I thought, you know, this was not a vision I had, but the clarity came through serving. And I think for every business leader mm-hmm. and every nonprofit leader, serving makes us relevant. We all find greatness in serving. And so if you're not serving, you're missing out on what's really needed and what's really important.
Yeah, I love that story so much. I adored Chris Crane. Yeah. We both love Chris Crane. Chris was, as Sean said, is a YPOer, a very successful businessman, and then went to the social enterprise side, was the CEO for Opportunity International, and now he's running Edify. I love that story, and I love the story of Andrea. Yeah. So, you
and
know,
what's
you said,
interesting too, yeah. too, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, you know, cause you said the clarity comes through the serving,
yeah.
but listen, you got some clarity from a 3.5-year-old too.
Yeah. Who had the heart to see that family get served, you know, and in my leadership, I found that if I keep serving as my ultimate goal of finding greatness, I'm always relevant. I like to, in the first chapter of my book, I tell the story, and I'll modify it quickly, of, you know, Blockbuster and Netflix. You know, Blockbuster doubled down on being a retail store and make everybody come stand in line to pick your videos, where I think Netflix understood they just wanted to get the content into people's homes. People wanted to watch a video in their home, and literally Netflix begged Blockbuster to buy them, and Blockbuster said, nah, we don't want your, but when you think of Netflix, they started out mailing DVDs to people's homes, but they didn't, mm-hmm. once streaming was available, they didn't care how the content got there, because they really understood who and what they were serving, where Blockbuster kind of doubled down on, we're a retail outlet, and they didn't understand they were actually providing entertainment in people's homes. But anyways, it's just mm-hmm. interesting when you serve and you keep, you know, the right goal in front of you, the vision gets bigger and bigger. And now, of course, Blockbuster barely exists, and Netflix is the, you know, gorilla on the end of the block, you know. So it's amazing how powerful the principle of serving to create future vision is.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, and I'm also thinking, Sean, as you talk about that, be faithful in small things, right? I mean, and I Absolutely. Mean, you started small. You started with one family, right? Yeah. And you were faithful in that. And God has just continued to expand the ministry. So how many houses now? Did you say 6,700?
7,600.
So, okay. So I transposed the number. So 7,600 homes have now been built. Since 1990, which is just incredible. Well, you know what, Sean, I've got pages and pages of notes left here, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Sean Lambert on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my dear friend, Sean Lambert. We've been talking about YWAM. We've been talking about Homes of Hope. We've been talking about all kinds of things. But, you know, Sean, you know, we've already talked to you, 7,600 homes so far. Just incredible since 1990. But in 2015, you celebrated your 25th anniversary. So, you know, what did you guys do? I know you had a big blowout. How did you celebrate that 25th anniversary?
We had a board meeting where somebody suggested we do 25 houses in one weekend, which we'd never done before. And we weren't even sure we could do it. And that's a lot of houses. And I just lit up and kind of literally inspired all of our team to do that. So we did 15 in Tijuana and 10 in Ensenada. And it was just incredible. We had hundreds and hundreds of people show up and we built these homes. And then we finished up with the day of celebration. We had everybody in chairs out on a big sports field and just celebrated some of the history and some of the stories. When I first started to learn about housing, it's an interesting story from a guy named Sergio Gomez, who grew up in his car, was kind of a hellion teenager. Gave his life to the Lord, and then started serving the poor. He had an orphanage, and he would build homes. And he took me in his pickup truck one day, and we drove by some of these families living with four old garage doors with a blue tarp. And he'd point to them, and he'd say, there's a smart family. And I said, Sergio, what's so smart about that family? It looked like they're living in poverty with a bunch of old garage doors. He goes, they own their land. He goes, that's who I help. I help fighters. I help people who first own their land, and then I help them. I go, what do you do for people who can't afford land? He goes, that's a different question. We, you know, give some food or we do what we can. But my focus is on helping people who are fighters. And so I adopted that. Everything I know about Homes of Hope, I got from a guy named Sergio Gomez back in 1989 and 1990. And so now every Home of Hope we build is built on land that the family owns. They don't have to have it paid for, but they have to have it owned. And that honestly has been the difference from the typical statement we all make. People need a hand up, not a handout. And so what it does is it creates an ownership within the family because they are very vested. They bought that land. And one of the families that you had mentioned during the break, Lisa, is the Guzman Ochoa family. And this family had been on the list to get a home. And then remember 2008, 2009, how wonderful that season was, the collapse of the U.S. economy. So we went from doing hundreds of homes down to a trickle, and they got kind of pushed down the list. And one day, I'll start crying when I think of this story, Josefina, the mom, was out of bullets. She had no money and came to a little educational program we have called the Walking Circle. And we taught reading and math and language and other things to these kids. And my daughter, Andrea, who's the same one who inspired the Homes of Hope, was out there teaching that day. And she would never bring money with her because when people come up and say, can you give me money? She didn't want to say no. She just wanted to say, I don't have any with me. So she would intentionally leave all her money in her room. Well, at the last minute, she ran back in the room and grabbed $5 because she felt like she should bring something out that day, which is not usual. She never brought money and happened to give this $5 to Josefina, and who burst into tears. And her little son said, now we can eat today, mommy. And yeah, it's a really sad story. And so Andrea comes across the border, and we had done this Taco Tuesday night at El Torito's. And so we're all sitting there eating our tacos and chips and salsa, and Andrea comes in and starts telling the story. So immediately my wife and my three daughters, they don't even finish eating. They get in the car and they go to Walmart and they load up on food. And the next day they make a delivery to Josefina's house. Now, they rolled up in a car, and Josefina had no idea that there's even any food in the car. They just see, she sees that somebody's coming to visit her. And the first thing out of Josefina's mouth was this: I always knew there was a God. I just didn't know he cared about me. And then we unloaded the food, which, of course, was a great relief to her. And we looked at her situation. It was horrible. Her husband had been robbed, their business. He was a businessman. Somebody stole all of their stuff out of their store. They were broke. He was sick with pneumonia. So we got him a house, and we began to invest in this family. And now they have, for many years now, been full-time staff with us. They actually ended up joining us. And they're helping us pick the next family that needs a house. So it's a great story of just serving. And the other thing that's fun about Homes of Hope is we started out with high school kids from churches. And then we ended up with all these business guys. So we've had, you know, Ken Blanchard, Patrick Lencioni, Steve Reinemann, who is retired CEO and chairman of Pepsi, Penny Pritzker, who is Secretary of Commerce, whose family owns the Hyatt, blah, blah. I mean, I could name drop for a long time.
Joel Manby.
Yeah. So many great, amazing people come. And I never spent a penny on trying to get rich people to come serve the poor. What happened is people, the more we had, back to my serving creates vision, the more we had the right serving model, the more people wanted to join us. And I think we've had 1,000 presidents of companies build with us since 1990. It's been amazing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I happen to know some of those presidents, Sean, that don't just their family, they bring their company. You know, they bring their people with them, you know, because they understand that
had one company in Indianapolis that brought 7,000 employees, spouses, and kids. And the CEO told me, you changed our company from a company that gives to a company of givers, which I thought was great, because most companies write a check or maybe they put some matching t-shirts on and clean a park for 2 hours and all that's wonderful. I'm not critical. But Homes of Hope is a great way to bring your employees to have a great event, way better than, what do they call it, the little crazy rope tests or whatever they
mount. Team building, the rope course.
This is the ultimate team building because you're actually serving someone who needs it. But anyways, it's been fantastic. And when ADT bought this guy's company, he told him, he said, "You bought my company because of my culture. Keep doing Homes of Hope because that's what helped create culture for my company." It's amazing how much Homes of Hope has contributed to so many employees and companies and management teams. We had one $1 billion entity that brought their managing board that was in a huge fight over, they were all going to sue each other. And they went out and built a Home of Hope. And what happened is it recalibrated everybody's ego and social, or their IQ, relational IQ with each other. And after the house build, they had their board meeting and they made some very good decisions that benefited the whole, not just one or two people. And the chairman of that conglomerate came up to me and handed me a big check and said, "You saved me a lot of legal fees. Thank you for Homes of Hope." So that was great.
He'd rather give you that money than a lawyer, right? Yeah, Sean, that's awesome. Great. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's talk about this real quickly, because I told you that, you know, our family has been blessed to come a few times and we were blown away by the efficiency. I mean, these homes go up in two and a half, 3 days max. Talk about the logistics a little bit, Sean. I mean, you guys, you know, talk about the concrete slab that's already there. I mean, you guys are so efficient with how you do it. And you do, don't you use local suppliers as well for the materials?
Yeah, I don't want to take too much credit for being a genius organizer. I'm really more of a visionary than an organizer. However, there's a book I read, there's a book I read when I was younger called The E-Myth. Some of you are familiar with it, Michael Gerber. Anyway, it's called The E-Myth, Entrepreneurial Myth. And we just use it to help our mind create reoccurring systems and processes. And when you create the right systems and processes, then all of our staff, which is 240, it's like almost never heard of a group comes and says, "I had a horrible experience." In fact, I can't think of a comment in the last decade that we got were, now somebody will come and say something went wrong, but it was small compared to the whole. But so yeah, this E-Myth is a great book if you want to understand how to create reoccurring systems and processes that can create excellence and ownership in your employees and how it goes out. So yeah, we put a concrete floor in, and then we have most of our houses that are wood, but different places in the world we've used metal studs and concrete blocks and ICF blocks and all kinds of cool stuff. Last year we did 100 Homes of Hope in Ukraine. They're called Emergency Homes of Hope. They're on a kind of walk-in cooler panels to help with the winter. We put stoves in them so people keep warm, and we're going to do another 100 homes in Ukraine this year. And the people were just, they don't want to leave. Their houses, where we built them, were right where the Russians and the Ukrainians fought, about 3 hours north of Kyiv, and they destroyed all of these little villages, but the people won't leave. So they're literally living in their old destroyed home with no roof or anything. So these are good for the next 5 to 10 years while they rebuild their old houses. But yeah, Homes of Hope has gone to Nepal and Cambodia. It's gone all over the world, and it's cool to see where it's gone since my 3-year-old daughter said, "Daddy, are you going to build a house for the bus people?"
Yeah, I love that. Bless Andrea's little compassionate heart. I'm so grateful for her and for being aware of that. But, you know, so we've talked a little bit about what, I mean, obviously, you know, this is awesome for the people that are volunteering. How much does it cost to build one house, Sean?
Right now, houses are running between $8,000 and $11,000, depending on the nation. You know, Costa Rica has to import lumber, so it's a little more. Baja, we're closer to the U.S., so it's a little cheaper. And then we put a furniture package in, and this is a really important part. So I watch what we do is we take, you know, a Walmart table with some plates and cups and matching everything. We put curtains in and a little clock on the wall. And when the wife walks into the house, we have a little process where we give them the keys and they walk in the house.
Yeah.
And they see the matching plates on the table and 4 chairs that match. Probably 95% of the time, the woman bursts into tears. And I think what the heart cry there is, I'm human. I have dignity. And so some people, you know, would say, well, why do you have to do the furniture? You've already given them a house. But I think the whole process of, you know, everybody, whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, the whole question of how do I love my neighbor? You know, like everybody's trying to figure out, you know, social responsibility and economy and business. Well, come build a home of hope. It's amazing. And it's life-changing, and it's a well-trodden, well-thought-out strategy, starting with how the communities we work in, how we do family selection, the build process. And one of my favorite stories is, we had the vice president of Vanity Fair magazine, and his wife was the vice president of Condé Nast Traveler. And they were very hesitant to come because we're a faith-based group. And I'm not saying, I don't really know much about their background, but they were just worried they were going to get thumped over the head with a Bible or something. And so they came into the meeting, and I use a little bit of humor sometimes. So I told them, I said, one of my guys might say, "Praise the Lord" out on the work site. And you might drop the F-bomb, but it's going to work out about the same, so don't worry about it. And he started laughing, and I think he's come 3 or 4 times now, and he's now moved on from those roles they had. They're no longer with Vanity Fair and Condé Nast. But, yeah, just it's anybody who's a friend of the poor is a friend of mine. We don't have an insider-outsider mentality. We have a common goal, and when we pray at the work site, so we pray for safety. We've had, you know, 150,000 volunteers and no one's got seriously hurt, and which is a miracle, really is. Mm-hmm. And then we pray a prayer of blessing and dedication at the end of the worksite, and that's optional. If people don't want to participate, they don't have to. And we just found if we respect each other, so this whole issue in the workplace of faith, which most HR companies say tolerance, we have a top policy of tolerance, which is kind of code word for everybody shut up. Nobody talk about anything. And I find celebration is a much more healthy goal that whether you go to church or don't go to church, who cares? Let's celebrate and respect each other. And then when we have common things we can do together, let's do them. But this idea of, oh, I can't be a part of Homes of Hope because it's a faith-based group, we've just proven that to be false. We've just had, you know, we host thousands of people every year that don't go to church but just want to serve the poor. And we host churches too. So it's very faith-filled and wonderful experience.
Yeah. I don't care who you are, Sean. I think people would say it is good to serve the poor. You know, it's good to serve the poor. I looked it up. There are actually over 2,000 references in the Bible. And I'm sure whatever your Bible is, your book, that is your playbook, you know, there's probably passages about the poor, but there's over 2,000 passages about the poor and how we're to care for them. So I absolutely love what you're doing. And it's so appropriately named, you know, Sean, just in the story that you told about the Ochoa family, you know, the hope and the dignity of having a home. And what people don't realize too is, you know, over 25% of these families are running their small business out of their home. Yeah. So, you know, there's an economic play too to this, right? And having a concrete floor versus a dirt floor is better for health reasons. And just the list goes on. But you know what? You and I could just talk forever. But I do want to ask you, because this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs, Sean?
Well, I know it, what all I can say is for me, but I think it could be helpful to everybody, is perseverance is an underrated leadership quality. And in 1994, we started in 90 with Homes of Hope. And by 1994, I kind of had imploded. One of my key guys had been doing cocaine in a hotel room with two prostitutes. And he told me I was not having sex with them. We were only doing cocaine. Which was not all that helpful of a comment. And when the smoke cleared, we were, you know, $50,000 was gone, and people started jumping off the sinking ship. And I went to my wife and I said, you know, I'm not a very good leader. What do you want to do? I said, I quit. And she looked at me and she said, in her words, I want to be in the will of God, which means I ain't giving up. And when she said that, I'm not kidding. It was like rebar came into my soul. I think I just needed somebody to tell me, don't quit. You know, somebody, and of course, who's closer than your spouse? And she started crying and I started crying, and we kind of just had our little prayer time together. And after that, we both realized if we quit now, any future homes built for the poor will not happen. And something like rebar steel, I don't know what happened. It just came into our spirit. And we circled the wagons, and we were $50,000 in debt. So I literally was taking things back to Home Depot. I probably shouldn't have. God bless Home Depot. They took everything back. But we had a barbecue that had been used a few times, not too much, but been used. And they took it back and gave us our money back. And, you know, within 6 months, we were out of debt. We started growing again, but this time in a healthy way. And I'm just so glad everything awesome in my life happened after I did not quit. So I want to encourage everybody, having a great vision, even having something super purposeful and relevant, all of us are going to have challenges, and sometimes they just beat us down. And, you know, find somebody in your life that can encourage you. In fact, there's a great book out called The Mind of a Millionaire. And they give 20 reasons why people are wealthy. And surprisingly, most people's wealth is first generation. Everybody thinks rich people just kind of got it handed to them. It's not true. And so the number one reason people were wealthy is they had a compelling vision and an energy around what they did. So it wasn't really going to work. They loved what they did. You know what the second reason was? There was a supporting, often mostly a spouse or someone very, very close to them, that when they were in their lowest moment, told them and said, I believe in you. Don't quit. You can do this. And who's better at it than Winston Churchill, right? Never give up. Never give up. And so I think perseverance, if you have a vision you believe in, if you're trying to do something great in the business sector or the nonprofit sector, you're going to hit the wall a few times, and perseverance is a very, very wonderful gift to every leader.
Such sage advice there, Sean. And I'm just thinking to myself, what if Janet had not spoken that truth into you? And what if you'd quit?
I'd be living in Yakima, Washington right now. That's where her sisters were. And I said, let's just go. I was going to tuck my tail and run, but she made me man up. So that was good.
That's awesome. Well, and there would be 7,600 families or 7,500 and whatever, minus a few, right? That would not have homes today. So gosh, what great sage advice. Well, Sean, this has been so delightful for me. I have loved every minute. I love every minute that we get to spend together, and this has been so much fun. So thank you for being on the show. I want people to go and check out Homes of Hope. I guarantee you, if you want to take your company, if you want to take your family, it's an awesome family experience. The one thing I would say about our family is when we've gone and done this with other families, you know, it's so much fun to watch our kids interacting with other kids, you know, and kids that they didn't know before.
Very relational.
It is very relational. You're up there on the roof. You're with a hammer or a power saw or what a power tool, as Paige called it. So anyway, please reach out to Sean. We'll put all of this in the show notes.
Just a quick, if you go to YWAM, the acronym, Youth with a Mission, YWAM, homesofhope.com or org, you'll find all kinds of information. There's a press kit in there. There's all kinds of stuff where you can connect with videos. So go to YWAM, Youth with a Mission, acronym YWAM, homesofhope.org, and you'll get all kinds of info, and we'll hope to see you out there.
And so thank you, my friend. Give Janet a big hug from me, and we hope to see you very soon.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.